Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
6 o'clock on Overdrive on TSN 1050. Maybe you're at tsn1050.ca. You might be on the iHeartRadio app, the TSN app. However you've come to be with us, thank you. We appreciate you listening. I am Derek Taylor, filling in for Brian Hayes. I'm alongside the Suns' Steve Simmons, and we're talking about John Gibbons. We're talking about Friday Night Football. We're talking about the first big night in NFL preseason. We're going to be joined by Chris Wessling of the NFL Network at the bottom of the hour to talk about who Steve should take first overall.
Oh, no.
I know what I'm doing. Well, maybe we can convince you otherwise. And we're talking about Mark Hunter. Steve was good enough to pass along some Mark Hunter news a little earlier on. He, of course, has been released from his duties with the Maple Leafs. I had been free to look for a job since, I want to say, the beginning of July-ish.
Mid-July,
and now he has found a job. Steve, hit me up.
Well, he has found his old job, is what he's done. As owner, or one of the owners of the London Knights, Mark Hunter has decided to go back to the London Knights as general manager of that team. And that's, I suspect, knowing Mark, he'll go back there and wait to see when an NHL GM job comes open that he might be right for or available for, and maybe take a shot at it.
Come to London, make it rain on me, and I will consider your proposal. That sounds
well. Cool. It's home.
Yeah,
it's his team with his brothers. It's a well-oiled financial machine. I mean, if you own a junior franchise like they do, that brings in $10,000 a game, and you're not paying your players, do the math. On 40 games a year, and they're making a lot of money. They make a lot of money when you operate a team like that.
As they probably should, yeah, absolutely.
And so there's the possibility now of you know, that happening for him. He can play if he chooses to.
Yeah.
And if not, Mark's a rink rat. He loves to be in the rinks. He loves to be scouting. He loves to be out finding players. So that this is what, when he was a London Knight guy, he went out and got Mitch Marner to come to London. Or Patrick Kane, or any of the other people they found along the way. And so now he'll go back to his roots, and I suspect, I haven't had a chance to talk to him. We tried to get him on, by the way. I texted Mark, and he texted back saying that he's out with people for dinner right now, and that he's unavailable to do an interview. We'll talk at another time, hopefully.
He's out with Dwayne Ford, having two dinners in one, because... Well,
he'd be in Winnipeg then, right?
That is just... I mean, yeah. He didn't say where he was.
I suspect he's in the London area or the cottage area in Western Ontario, where they spend a lot of their time in the summers.
Yeah. Curious where John Gibbons will spend his summer next year. Yeah, look how I did that. That worked out pretty good.
And you know what? He wants to be in baseball.
Absolutely.
There was a point in time in this year where I thought, and I said this to people, I might have said it on radio, I thought John was ready to go home and call it a career. I thought that there had been some things that had happened, and there had been some personal life things that needed to be addressed. And I thought that he might have been ready to say, you know what, this is baseball. Let's put it aside. I'm going to go home. I'm going to take care of some business and work from there. But in the second half of the season, I've noticed a difference. And I asked him that question a few days ago. And you have to explain how these things work. Every day, John Gibbons meets with the media in his office. It's about a half an hour, you know, sort of Q&A and shoot the breeze kind of thing. And if I ask a question in that office setting, everybody in the office setting gets the answer.
Yep.
So when you have a real good subject that you need to ask about, you got to wait until the half an hour is over, and then you got to sneak out to the field, and you got to find a moment that you can get John alone. So the other day, when the rumors were floating about, you know, the possibility of him being fired, I noticed that one minute I was sneaking over to talk to him, then I noticed John Lott from The Athletic was sneaking in the hallway over to talk to him, then I saw somebody else doing it. It was like everyone was having their little one-on-one meetings. And what I came up with a meeting, at least talking to him, he wants to be in baseball next year. He'd love to be managing in baseball next year. If not, maybe a bench coach somewhere. And even he raised the point to me that a roving instructor wouldn't be a bad life either if that was...
He can't deal with young guys is the thought.
Who said that, by the way? Who brought that up?
Let's go to the MLB Network for Gibbons was on a little earlier today, and his response to the, hey, are you going to be fired soon, was super interesting.
hey, my days are finished here. You know, it's been a wonderful ride. And, you know, maybe it is, you know, maybe they would benefit from getting a new fresh face that, you know, could grow with the young players and things like that. You know, I'm not so sure that I want to go through one of those things, you know, a total rebuild. But we'll probably sit down, I'm sure, before it's all said and done and, you know, talk that out. You know, the rumor came out and said that this would be my last homestand. That would surprise me, you know, considering where we're at in the season. Mm-hmm. But you never know either, so.
And then he would later address those comments saying, hey, they brought it up to me, which doesn't necessarily change the answer. Richard Griffin of the Toronto Star joins us now. And, Griff, when you heard those comments, did you think dead man walking? What did you think?
Well, I heard those comments one-on-one 2 days earlier. Steve heard them 3 days earlier. So I think that when it's on MLB.com or one of the national networks, it's sort of bears more weight. But it's nothing new that he's really talked about. And what my impression is that he doesn't want to – if they're going to go into a rebuild that's going to take 2 or 3 years, he's willing to manage in 2019, but he doesn't want to do a full rebuild. And he thinks it's better for the team moving forward to have the same guy in place from 2019 on. So I'm not so sure about during the season replacing him. I don't think that's a good idea. But if they come to a mutual agreement at the end of the season, which Steve and I both agree, I think that it's pretty much fait accompli.
What did he say to you about why, or did he say anything to you about why that doesn't appeal to him? Because at 56, he's got a lot of working years left in him if he wants, and this new generation of talent might be the best in the majors. Is there anything you think or you know that doesn't appeal to him?
Well, I asked him about the fact of being the two consecutive American League Championship Series and if that sort of completed his resume, his time in Toronto with the Jays. And he agreed that without that, it would be empty. And I think that without those 2 years, he'd be willing to sort of jump in there with that. And as you point out, this is going to be a pretty talented group coming up. But it's going to be 2020, middle of 2020 at the earliest. Which means that, you know, as Steve said earlier, he wants to still be in baseball. He's still young enough to contribute, but he doesn't want to start again with this organization with which he's had success.
So where do you think the rumor came from, and what was the purpose of it?
Well, I think it's, you know, they may have approach Gibby about it, but it's as much a trial balloon as anything else. And you know, with half the media already working for the same ownership, it's an easy enough thing to accomplish. I found it hilarious before today's game. Everybody went in the office of Tampa Bay. There's not really much going on, and there's silence in the room, as you know, Steve, that can be deadly. And he goes, somebody goes, not much going on, and somebody else says, well, everybody's waiting for Vlad to come up from Buffalo. And one of the media members goes, oh, well, I won't be here for that. And Gibby looks and smiles and goes, I won't be either.
But there's a point.
He's as self-deprecating as he gets. But I think it was a trial balloon floated by ownership. And, you know, the only thing that really makes sense is to do it at the end of the season.
I'm going to ask you this because you've been around the game for such a long time. Have you ever heard a manager with 49 games to go or whatever it is now basically saying, I'm done at the end of this year?
No. In fact, going back to Montreal and here in Toronto, you know, that's over 40 years. I've never heard it. I've never heard that scenario. It's not like you're on a farewell tour or anything. And managers need to have at least that influence in the clubhouse. But everybody in that clubhouse knows that this is going into a rebuild. And the veterans that are in there, a lot of them know they're not going to be around next year. And the young guys are still going to play hard because it's for their future. And they know there's a lot of eyes on them.
Rich, is there anything about Gibbons as a manager? When I see him, I know him through the TV, so I know of his. He seems like a really nice, lovable guy who, I mean, he's a straight shooter with the media, so I can only assume he's a straight shooter with his players. Is there anything about him, say, for the future, that makes you think, oh, yeah, he would not be great with a group of young kids?
Well, I mean, he's had isolated situations with young kids coming through, and he told me that he's very proud of what he's done with those kids. But in a total rebuild, you're going to have a roster of mostly kids, and I just don't think that he has the what it takes to in terms of patience with a group like that after what he's had in terms of veteran talent since he came back in 2013. And I think he's right. I mean, if he can't put 100% into running a spring training camp, and he doesn't run the tightest teaching training camp, he's always relied on veterans knowing how to play the game, and they go through the paces, get ready for the season. If he has to change his coaching staff and bring in more teaching coaches, I don't think that's what he signed up for.
So let's see if I can get this straight for a moment. In the past year or two, the current Blue Jay management team has acquired Teoscar Hernandez, Diaz at shortstop, Solarte in the infield, signed Kendrys Morales long-term. The only player that they've acquired who can play any kind of defense is Randall Grichuk, and we're not sure if he can hit on a regular basis. Does this management team right now just solely disregard defense, or what's your view on that?
I'm just smiling as you're going down that list of players that they've acquired. And, yeah, I think that's one thing that analytics hasn't caught up with yet. You know, there are defensive statistics in analytics, but you know, you're talking most of these young GMs are fantasy league graduates, fantasy team graduates, and defense doesn't play a part in their thinking there. And, yeah, this is one of the worst defensive teams that we've seen in a long time with the Blue Jays, and it translates into a pitching staff that has to throw more pitches, has more runs scored against them on ground balls that go through, fly balls that land. And, yeah, I think that if you've seen the movie Major League, where Cleveland is trying to tank and so they can get rid of the franchise, this is probably as close as you got to that.
Are you bringing the Major League reference script? Are you thinking the next guy they call is like, got a guy about some white walls on the other line. I'll get back to you. Not want to take the job?
It's you know, they have guys. I think John Schneider at AA is a guy that they have in mind. He'd be much, you know, he's been in the organization since 06 as an instructor and a coach and a manager. And most of these kids that they're going to bring up are guys that have played for him or that he has worked with. And I think a guy like that, if they brought John Schneider up on September 1st, which they're allowed to do, bring an extra coach in and have him watch for a month and see what's up and refamiliarize himself with all his players that he's seen before, I think that would be the ideal situation, more so than having John Gibbons come back and fulfill his 2019 obligation.
One, before letting you go, Rich, if you were the GM of the Blue Jays, do you wait on Vladdy Guerrero until next April or late in next April, or do you move on him now?
I think it's a show of bad faith to the fans if you wait until late in April and you try and hold him for a seventh season before free agency. I think the good faith scenario would have him come up at the latest on September 1st or when the Buffalo season is done. Play a month here, and then have him in position on opening day.
That's what I like to hear. Rich Griffin, Toronto Star, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the game tonight.
Okay, guys, thanks.
Bring him up.
I'm of the same mind.
But
if 3 years in, let's say he has three monster years, or close to that, then you put your pen to paper, and you sign him long-term. And you don't have to worry about what year he's a free agent, because you've got him for 6 or 7 or 8 years, whatever you're signing him for.
Yeah,
the Mike Trout thing.
There's so much about control, right? And if you can manipulate those dates even a little bit in your favor,
and you know get just an extra little get an extra See, year I'd, before you. If you can get to the state where the Jays are with Josh Donaldson, and I know it wasn't them doing it, but the guy's not a free agent until he's 40 coming up soon. Like that, he's been so underpaid throughout his career. If you could try and underpay a guy in that fashion, You have to do it. And I know the fans want to see him so bad, and they'll yell on Twitter, but there's a reality of everything.
What does it matter what he's paying or being paid when, A, there's no salary cap, B, it's a corporate ownership who can afford to do whatever the heck they decide they want to do. I mean, what we've seen in the last
It's not a Saudi regime here. It's not. I'm not
the last 4 years.
It's not run by Syria. They can just do whatever they want and just punish people. Like they have. Ultimately, they have responsibilities to stakeholders.
Ultimately, ownership gives management a budget to work within, and they work within that. Every operation works that way. In some leagues, they call it a salary cap. In others, it's still a budget you have to work within. My point is that what we've seen in this market is when the fans are engaged, they are tremendous. And attendance has in 2015 and 2016 and for parts of 2017 were spectacular. They were right up at the top of the league. They are down 11,000 this year. They'll likely be down a little bit more than that by the time the season ends. And they won't be selling the season ticket packages and the 10-game packages and all those things the way they did in 2015 or 2016 and 17 because people don't know what they're going to be buying. So until they see what the product is, to me, that's one of the reasons you bring Vladimir Guerrero up now to give them a taste, to get people excited about what this team might be. You know, people were pretty excited about Austin Matthews in his first year with the Leafs.
Aren't you
excited? Even though no one knew what he was going to do.
If you're a Jays fan, aren't you already excited? Aren't you like, I'm going to hold back just a little bit because the baseball climax is going to be so much stronger in 2019. I'm just going to hold off for just a bit.
I think what you have, this is a fair weather town. This is a town that buys tickets not because a team is great, because it's a cool thing to be at. And it's a cool place to be. And a lot of what Toronto is, other than Leaf fans, it's being part of something that you think is important or being at a place where it's cool to be. Now, before 2015, for 20 years, it wasn't a very cool place to be to watch baseball in Toronto. And so you didn't see very many young people there. You didn't see very many female people there. And then all of a sudden, the crowd changed in 2015. And then it changed again in 2016. And it changed in terms of age, and it changed in terms of sex, and it changed in very many ways. And that fan, the casual one, the one that comes and goes, isn't the one you're talking about. You're talking about the diehard. Diehard will always have its heart in with the team. It's that casual guy, that sliding scale, that makes the difference between whether you're near the top of the league in attendance or whether you're near the bottom.
I could go a little further on that, but we got to take a little break. Because you pay a price in the future for doing it now. You lose some of the hype in the future if you take that hype in now, and so you have to balance out everything else.
I always hear what a terrible stadium it is. Mark Shapiro says it all the time. We can't compete in this stadium.
It's fine.
When Jose Bautista was tossing the bat. Yeah. Did anybody walk out of Rogers Center that day and say, I'm not coming back here, this is a terrible stadium?
This is the quality of bratwurst they're trying to sell me? Offensive. 6:18, it's Overdrive on TSN 1050. Bottom of the clock, we're going to talk NFL with Chris Wessling of the NFL Networks. Get some help for Steve's fantasy team. Hear about Baker Mayfield. Oh, baby. And Saquon Barkley. What a great debut for him. And oh, by the way, Josh Allen might have had the touchdown pass of the year already in week one of the preseason. It's coming up on Overdrive. Steve Simmons, you cannot be kneeling during the Overdrive anthem as we come back at 6:25. That is super offensive.
By the way, how many times during a national anthem at a sporting event were you in the washroom or you in a concessions line?
That's the best part of the whole thing. You need to support the anthem. Yeah, we say this because there was a big night in the NFL last night, a bunch of preseason games, I think a dozen, and there were various protests of guys came, you know, walked out the tunnel during the anthem, raised fists, took a knee, turned their back, assorted things. And I love the comment someone had thrown on Twitter when the NFL made its policy before it reversed and took away its policy, saying, oh, so of course all these patriotic owners are going to make their concessions stop dead and pay attention to the anthem. Oh, no, it's only the players? Oh, okay. Just, and they're not protesting the anthem. They don't, they're not protesting the flag. They don't like being murdered in their own cars, and they don't like people who look like them being murdered in their own homes. Let's just, it is what it is. That's what the protest is.
But you want to get rid of the protest? It's very simple.
Okay.
Get rid of the anthems.
Why do they play the anthem at every non-major sporting event? It drives me bonkers.
If I go to a movie tonight, am I going to hear the anthem at the movie before I play? No, I'll get some commercials on the thing, a few trailers.
No, you're just going to see the Black Klansman by Spike Lee.
That's the movie I want to see.
Oh, absolutely. But it's so ridiculous.
Except it's too late tonight. It's 10:40 or something.
Ah, it's never too late. 41 times a year.
Wait till you're in your 60s.
41 times a year. It's got to be played for a Leafs game. I get it if you want to play it at the Super Bowl. I think some of the greatest moments I've had in sports were watching Whitney Houston did the anthem in
Tampa.
The Super
Bowl.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, but for all three of the times that you remember the anthem, there was 7,000 other ones that you have no recollection of it at all.
Yeah, being a Winnipeg.
Because I was typing in a press box while it was going on.
Yeah.
Or I was eating popcorn, or I was lined up for a hot dog, or I was in the washroom doing what we do naturally.
If you went to a Winnipeg Jets game 3 years ago, 2 years ago, there was a veteran who sat in the front row on the glass. His name was Croppy. And they would show him, and he would be dressed up, and he'd be, you know, especially around Remembrance Day, they would put him on the screen, and everybody would roar in applause. And you'd think, yes, okay, you could do that in a million other ways. Please, let's not play the anthem.
But
we get it. You're all patriotic in America. You're so patriotic. You have a second song in the seventh inning. Get it out of my face.
I don't want this to come across the wrong way. So I'm going to try and
I think
say
I've made this. Sure it will. So.
No, I'm going to try and say this next bit properly. Because sport today, professional sport in North America today, has decided the best way to get a standing ovation at any sporting event is to honor a serviceman. And it's done now at every baseball game and every football game and every hockey game and every basketball game. And it is a wonderful gesture, except later I found out, or many people found out in the United States, that the U.S. Army is actually paying
the Falcons got some like teams $4 million that
to
year.
Honor people, to big on respect. At what point in time did that become a thing? Because for years and years and years, it didn't exist. And now every single game, you know, it's kind of like shoving patriotism down your throat, so to speak.
Well,
I'm a patriot. I'm a huge patriot. And I'm a huge supporter of the armed services. And I'm not saying that as a negative thing. I'm just saying, why does it belong in that venue?
It lessens the impact of it, right? It lessens the impact. If it's done 32 NFL teams play 16 times a year, 256 times a year plus the playoffs, it lessens the impact that anyone can. Oh, this is Sergeant Major John Olerud.
Well, we have bets now at the Leaf games.
I could have picked a better name than John Olerud.
We
anyway.
Have bets now at the Leaf games as to which ex-Leaf is in the crowd today to present, you know, the armed forces guy with a jersey or whatever it is they get. And depending on, like, if it's Tuesday in the middle of November, it's like we're talking about the, you know, the obscure ex-Leaf, the guy who might have played 9 games one time. You know, once in a while you get the Wendell Clark or the Daryl Sittler.
Carlo Koliakovo.
Oh, you can't say that on this radio station because Carlo's about to become huge around here.
Huge.
But you get these Dave McElwains and once in a while, I don't know, Lou Franceschetti or one of these guys. Let's be honest, they weren't prominent in your youth. You know, I really need a Lou Franceschetti shirt. And I say that with all due respect. I really like Lou. But it's not like one of the highlights of my life waiting to have him present me with a jersey.
Presenting the jersey tonight, Zdeněk Nedved.
Yes.
Of the 1990. I remember he came into the keg when I worked there back in the day, and I was like, oh, who's this guy? Oh, I don't know who that is.
He wasn't Peter Nedved.
No, he absolutely was not. That stuff drives me bonkers, but that is not why we want to talk about the NFL. We want to talk about it because I think you have a real dilemma, Steve Simmons, as to who you take first in your fantasy draft keeper. So we want to bring in.
Begin with a premise, though. There's nothing more boring than individual people talking about their own fantasy teams on radio or television.
But it will spawn great conversation with Chris Wessling of the NFL Network. Chris, thanks for being with us on Overdrive.
Hey, thanks, guys. Pleasure to be here.
All right, here is the premise. Keeper Fantasy League, you have the first overall pick in a keeper league. Do you take Baker Mayfield? Do you take Saquon Barkley? What do you do fantasy-wise?
Oh, I don't think there's any question you go Saquon Barkley.
Running back, sorry.
See, that's what I said. You got to take the running back, because you can get, there's a whole pile of quarterbacks who get almost the same amount of points.
Yeah.
Yeah, running backs who are top five picks are almost always sure things, and this guy's already been talked about as a Hall of Fame talent. I think you got to go that way.
What a run last night. What a way to start. I know it's preseason football. I know we really shouldn't care, but what a run to start a career.
Yeah, that's not going to stop the hype, is it? I mean, everybody's already assuming this guy's going to be a stud, and then, like, I just assume, even though I think that Eli Manning is a disadvantage competitively at this stage of his career, I just assume the Giants' offense is going to be almost impossible to stop because you've got the two best athletes on the field every time they take the field.
Well, and it showed kind of what people talked about with Barkley, and one, elite athletic talent, two, not necessarily a guy who's going to jam that run up the middle, but he bounces it outside, and then he bounces it again, and then he cuts back inside, and then zoom, he's gone, because, man, that dude can run. But how well will the Giants pass him the ball in a passing league, which the NFL now is, will be the big question, right?
Yeah, I think Eli could be a bounce-back candidate just because you've got McAdoo out of there. Pat Shurmur is a good coach. Odell Beckham's healthy. You know, they had so many injuries last year. But I see this passing attack, even though I really don't think Eli's that good anymore. But I still think they're a candidate.
I'm with you.
He's just not. I mean, he hasn't been for a few years, and he doesn't even make the throws that he used to make. He goes down too easily in the pocket against pressure. But, you know, how much of that is bad instincts from playing with a bad offensive line and unhealthy receivers? So they're an interesting offense to watch.
There's a guy named John Elway. He didn't win a Super Bowl until he was pretty much done. And at the end, he just handed the ball to Terrell Owens. And everyone says, now look at John
Terrell
Elway.
Terrell Davis.
He got two Super Bowls late in his career.
He helicoptered.
And he barely had anything to do with either of them. I could see Eli doing that.
This feels like a revisionist history narrative. John Elway was a very good quarterback.
Oh, he was an amazing quarterback. He never won when he was amazing. He won when he wasn't amazing.
No, but he still was. He was a very good older quarterback. Like, he was still one of the best quarterbacks in the league at the time.
No, he was.
Steve might be thinking about...
I was there for both of those Super Bowls.
You might be thinking of the Denver Broncos' Peyton Manning, who was objectively awful at the time that he won.
He was, too. Sometimes, every once in a while, a terrible quarterback wins a Super Bowl. Not very often, but it happens.
Trent Dilfer, who was more impressive in that game for you, Chris? Was it Saquon Barkley, or was it Baker Mayfield?
I'm going to say Baker, just because... Because of the opportunity advantage, Barkley just had the one big run and it didn't do much on his other few carries. But I thought Mayfield looked really good. He seems like the real deal to me. It's tough to tell off of one preseason game, but I thought he looked really good.
Yeah, I was watching him last night. I admit, I don't watch much college football, so I didn't get a sense of what kind of college player he was. But I was surprised, like a lot of people, when he was the first pick in the draft. I thought last night, for a first quarter of the first preseason game in a team that has been horrendous offensively the last several years, that he looked so comfortable. And that's what impressed me the most, was how well he moved around and how comfortable he looked.
Yeah, and for a guy who supposedly comes from a gimmick offense in college, he seems ready to run an NFL offense. This does not seem like a guy who needs, sort of the air raid or anything like that. He can run an NFL offense, and to me, he went through his progressions well. He moved well in the pocket, threw it to the right guys. I thought it was a really promising performance.
I got to see the highlights this morning off of NFL.com, and there were at least four plays that stuck out that I went, oh, this guy's an NFL, should be a day one starter. He hits Njoku for a touchdown. He had to buy a little extra time and then hammer the ball in between two defensive backs. I went, okay. Eye-popping.
And what happens when Josh Gordon can play?
Oh man, even more weapons. He throws back shoulder on the sidelines, and then one that didn't seem like much and ends up being a slant that gets busted for a touchdown. But he drops back, and you see his third step. He pumps because he wants to throw it, but he's like, oh crap, I need to wait a half a beat because the linebacker is going to be in the way. Lets the linebacker clear. Boom, hits his man for a slant and a touchdown. And I thought, wow, you're ready. You're ready. I'm super excited about Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I think comparing him to Josh Allen, who was very electric and exciting to watch too, I did think that Mayfield seemed like the guy who was more NFL ready, seemed to know what he was doing a little bit better, and adjusted, like you said, to coverages and still made the right plays.
Let's talk about Josh Allen for a second, because a very high draft pick of the Bills, and the Bills are very close to our heart. His late touchdown, and if you haven't seen it, listening, please do watch his touchdown pass to Ray McLeod III very late in the fourth quarter. Might be the throw of the year already. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, that was a tiny window, and it was closing fast that he put that through. I thought when I first saw the play that it might have glanced off of a couple of different defensive back fingertips, because the coverage was that tight there, that window. I thought, if I was a Bills fan, I'm entranced by the talent, because you just don't see arms like that. The mobility on the third down scrambles was impressive, and to me, it's a signal of hope. I know that he's not ready now, but that ability is so rare.
I love the fact that you use the word hope, because we're close to Buffalo here. And we know what the football has been like there for a very long time. And we know what the quality of quarterbacking and the lack of quarterbacking has been like for too long here. And certainly we've watched enough of the Cleveland Browns over the last many years to realize how horrible the quarterbacking has been there. And so here you've got two real good football towns, real exciting, that have something actually to be excited about.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's been said 1,000 times that he absolutely has the arm perfectly suited for the weather in Buffalo. And I get a little upset when I hear a top 10 overall pick, just a certain segment of the football cognoscenti has already written him off before he's even played a game. And that's incredibly insulting to the people who work for the Bills and have spent, you know, their entire lives learning football and spent the entire offseason studying this guy. So many hours and expertise went into it, and you're already writing the guy off. To me, that's just, it's insane. Let the guy play. Let's see who he is. And to me, that was a very hopeful first game.
How about Aaron Rodgers many years ago? How about Randy Moss many years ago? How you can run through. Cognoscenti is help. You know, there's in every league, in every sport, as you lead up to drafts, there's always pack mentality thinking, and it's never going to change. And teams do their own work. Why? Because their people are smarter than the people who are doing the cognoscenti people.
All 32 guys making draft picks do it for a living, and some of them are going to get it horribly wrong, right? Some of these quarterbacks are going to be disasters, and we won't have seen it. If Sam Darnold is a disaster, we won't have seen it coming. But if it happens, it'll have happened. I'm on the Josh Allen was a bad pick train, because this, when you know of his inaccurate, I mean, when you can't throw the ball sometimes from A to B and it's 5 yards down the field, that's a real problem. But then he does these plays that literally no one in the league can do. We've seen it in one game. You go, oh, it's hard not to fall in love with that. Chris, where are you on Josh Allen, knowing what he did at Wyoming and going forward?
Well, like you guys, I'm not a huge college guy. That's my off day during the week, you know? But, but I'm in the wait and see category that I'm not, I don't have a great opinion on what he's going to be, but I agree. Some of these guys are going to work out. Some of them are not. Accuracy is an issue. I think his footwork's a bit of an issue. You saw that his timing was a little bit off last night. These are all issues, but most quarterbacks do come into the league with issues. And I think the guys who are paid to coach him up, that's why they're making the money. I'm not going to write a guy off when he's that, like you said, he can do things that nobody can do.
Come on.
And when see that arm, if you can coach him up to be a Cam Newton-level passer or a little bit better, He's a starter in the NFL.
There was a quarterback with the Atlanta Falcons.
We're going back.
Yeah.
1981.
I'm not giving you a year.
We're going back
there
to
the story.
There was a quarterback. Steve Bartkowski.
He couldn't throw where they wanted him to throw. His footwork was bad. His timing was bad. The coach, I believe it was Jerry Glanville, says, I can't handle this guy. They traded him to Green Bay.
Brett Favre.
I think he can play a little bit. He's in the Hall of Fame. He has a Super Bowl. He should have more than one, by the way, but that's another story.
Jerry Glanville also said Brett Favre was trying to drink up the city of Atlanta at the time.
Yeah. Now by the way, he's the defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the 76-year-old Jerry Glanville is.
Yeah.
Jerry Glanville. Probably pissing off all the other teams in the league in some manner or fashion.
I suspect behind the scenes it may be going on. Chris, before we let you go, I just want to ask you about Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin on the same field. It was awkward in the Cam. I mean, Kelvin had said, hey, it would have been great if I could have played with an accurate quarterback, a guy like Aaron Rodgers, and names off a couple other guys, insinuating that Cam isn't super great at his job. Cam goes up to him to try to talk about it, and Kelvin wants none of it. Is that the best separation you've ever seen Kelvin Benjamin get on an NFL field?
All right, that's funny. Yes, I thought Cam handled it superbly. It's like dealing with a Twitter troll. You know, you confront him, and then he runs away because he doesn't want to say it to your face. Cam handled it beautifully, and Kelvin wanted nothing to do with it.
Can you come and handle some of my trolls?
I just block them all.
I don't block anymore. I mute. It's the best thing ever.
Mute's outstanding.
They don't know they've been muted. It's great.
Yeah, it's screaming into the wilderness.
Exactly. Chris Wessling of the NFL Network. You can follow him at Chris Wessling, WESSELING. Chris, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate you joining us on Overdrive.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
That's Chris Wessling of the NFL. Josh Allen, bust.
Do you have an NFL?
Saying that right now.
Do you have an NFL team?
I don't. Like you and I were talking about earlier, I fall in love with players. I don't have teams that I follow anymore.
I had a team, and they moved from Baltimore in the middle of the night. And when Robert Irsay moved the Baltimore Colts from Baltimore to Indianapolis, and Johnny Unitas, I think, was retired by then. Burt Jones, I believe, was the quarterback. It broke my heart as someone who'd grown up as a Baltimore Colts fan. And I never had a team after that.
Did you have the tight haircut?
No, the flat top?
You rested a glass?
I did have high tops in high school.
Yeah, you did.
And the best thing I had, and I don't think they even sell them anymore, I had a kicking shoe.
Oh, boy.
You know what a kicking shoe? The square toe.
Oh, yeah.
Kicking shoe. Because I was the place kicker on my high school football team, among other things.
Half a foot like that old Saints kicker who had the record.
Tom Dempsey.
There we go. That's amazing.
But that thing, boy, could you kick the ball off a long way when you had that toe.
Little piece of lead goes a long, long way. Yeah. 6:43 on Overdrive. Our best bets coming up. We'll wrap the show after the break right here on TSN 1050. Today, Steve Simmons, 3 hours, sunglasses in the radio studio. Though I don't feel this is an obnoxious, you're hiding one. I feel there's something deeper to why you are wearing tinted glasses here today.
I'm driving here and it's sunny out. I've got my sunglasses on. So I park to come in, you know, and you leave your regular glasses in the car and you keep the sunglasses on, and then you become too lazy to go back out to get the said sunglasses because, you know, this isn't on TV today and nobody's ever going to know or see or care.
But I can't see into your soul. I don't know how passionate you are about Saquon Barkley.
I'm very passionate.
So passionate.
When you finish last and you get the first pick.
I'm just saying Baker Mayfield's going to be in the league for 15 years. Saquon Barkley could be a non-factor in 5 years.
Okay.
So maybe for your
5 years, I'd probably be retired.
Yeah, that's true.
I suspect. If I'm counting properly here. And
you're in win-now mode. I get it. I totally understand. I am in win-now mode.
I'm like Lamarillo.
I like the way you think. I'm in win-now mode. Time now for today's best bets. Brought to you by ProLine. Oh, baby, here's what we've got. You take the Winnipeg Blue Bombers taking on the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Winnipeg at home, they're going to win that game by 4. Easy take, Winnipeg. Take the Atlanta Braves on the road and Boston. The visitors at Baltimore. Come on. It's the Red Sox. Do it. I throw $20 on that. I get all three predictions right. You and I are going to split a cool $101.20. Find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio, and you can get way into the game with ProLine. It is the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine. Get way into the game. We have some NFL time here. Washington rookie running back Darius Geis, torn ACL, out for the year. At Dan Daly on Sports tweeting, hey, Redskins fans, don't worry. Here's the top three guys who, in career rushing yards, who missed their rookie year thanks to injury. Ricky Waters, over 10,000 rushing yards after missing his rookie season with an injury. So, not bad.
If I had done that, you would have made someone, oh, another 1980s guy.
That's true. That's reference. True. So, when you drop back to the 60s and the 40s. We got about 2 minutes. Where are you on Josh Allen train? Because I am firmly off on the why the hell did you pick this guy train.
I have not seen enough to have an opinion. I didn't watch last night's game. I saw the highlight of the touchdown. I love the fact he's got a big arm.
Huge, might be the strongest arm in the NFL. No, I've never already.
I haven't seen many better arms than Jeff George, who was a lousy NFL quarterback.
In the history, football outsider Scott Kazmir posted on Twitter, there had been, in the last 12 years in the NFL, there had been 17 passes thrown that traveled 60 yards or more in the air. Allen threw two of them last night. He threw two passes over 60 yards, which we can debate how useful those are. That's impressive as hell.
I asked Tom Brady at one of his Super Bowls, what's the biggest arm you've ever seen? And he wasted no time at all. And it was a perfect answer for a guy from Toronto. His answer was Michael Bishop.
Oh, yeah.
And Michael
absolutely.
Bishop, who played a long time in the CFL and played, was
Kansas
at
State,
one time
the Patriots,
he was
yeah.
the Patriots' backup quarterback to Drew Bledsoe when Tom Brady was the third quarterback.
Enormous arm.
And
no ability to
Brady
quarterback.
Brady said that he could throw the ball 90 yards, which, you know, seems impossible, but he could do it. And
that's a very good one.
My favorite Michael Bishop story, when he was the Argos starting quarterback, Pinball Clements was the coach. And Pinball Clements had spent the entire week heading into their season opener waiting for, you know, as all teams do, plotting out what's our first play of the game, what's our second play. You know, they do the top 15 plays or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So they have their first play of the game, and they've worked on it all week long, and Michael Bishop goes out, and he runs the wrong play.
And that was why Michael Bishop, those are the two reasons he kept getting jobs. Huge arm, but then he kept losing them because he couldn't get it done. Coming up on 6:53, Steve Simmons, great working with you.
Have a good weekend.
Yeah,
not a long one, but a good one.
I'll be back at 10 p.m. tomorrow doing Sports Center. It's Overdrive.
Who are you with?
Laura Dykin, as usual.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so 10-1 on SportsCenter on the weekend. Thanks for being with us. It's Overdrive, TSN 1050 and TSN1050.ca.